Welcome to another of the Maine Humanities Council's Humanities on Demand podcasts. In this episode, we revisit a recording made in 2009 of The Thinking Heart, a performance in two voices with cello by Martin Steingesser, Judy Tierney, and Robin Jealous. This project received a grant from the Maine Humanities Council this past year that allowed them to put on a performance at Bates College. The Thinking Heart is an original arrangement of journal and letters written by a Dutch woman who chose to enter a World War II concentration camp over liberation in order to be with her people. These letters are adapted into poetry and performed by alternating speakers accompanied by cello. Here, Martin Steingesser introduces The Thinking Heart.
We are about to take a journey with a Dutch woman, Etty Hillesum, into one of the darkest moments in history. An extraordinary journey, not only because of the moment and terrain, but because of the light in which this young woman holds the experience. We move with her from a place of paralyzing fear to one in which she refuses escape, can choose to travel east into the darkness to help those who cannot escape and to share the fate of her people. So this is a journey into darkness and light at the same time. It's ironic the way to Auschwitz was east, where we usually look for light. But the light Etty finds is in herself, and she committed to being light for others. And that's not just some pretty idea. A survivor of the camps, someone who did not know Etty, remembers seeing her at a distance with what looked to be light around her. The Thinking Heart. What Etty aspired to be, as she said, for a whole concentration camp, is the name we've taken for our program. Not a narrative, it is a collage of moments constellated as poems, most drawn from Etty's letters written at Westerbork, which was a way station on the Netherlands border with Germany, where the Nazis held Dutch Jews sent on to Auschwitz. We begin a little earlier in Amsterdam. Etty has not yet been ordered to Westerbork and has returned to recover her strength, but already looks back longingly at her time there with friends who are detained. It is summer, 1942.
Worries. Worries leap up like vermin. A knot inside makes it hard to breathe, pace the room, have a stomach ache. I will write these times like faint brushstrokes against the great wordlessness of God, life, death, suffering, eternity. Wield this fountain pen like a hammer. My words, so many hammer blows.
I ought to be able to live without books, without anything. There'll always be a patch of sky, space to fold hands in prayer. Vial straps on a rucksack, too heavy for his slight back. I walk toward Central Station with him. One ought to stay up all night, do nothing but pray.
Curled up on this floor, in my big striped dressing gown, darning socks. Water so clear, you see right to the bottom. Life in its thousand details twists, turns like a crystal clear sea. What a way I have, huddled on the floor of the man I love, darning his socks, and at the same time, beside a mighty ocean, so transparent, I see right to the bottom.
The lights are being turned off in the men's barracks. Those 2 months behind barbed wire. Where are you tonight, Hiopi, little comrade? Sadness. Sadness now. I can't walk out onto the great moor outside the barracks. I imagine walking round the camp and find him, tanned face, that furrow between his eyes. Hiopi, I am so afraid you'll have a hard time. As it grows dark, I can hear in the distance the first chords of Beethoven's Fifth. I learned to love Westerbork.
At the front, in prisons, in camps, men and women kept apart. You've got to come to terms with that, not just stoke your desire. Turn love into a force. Something good for each other, tangible as we are in bed.
How is this stretch of heath, bound in barbed wire, through which so much misery floods, almost lovely? How is it my spirit grows lighter, brighter here? How draw these barracks, this small village between heath and sky, with a few rapid, delicate, yet powerful strokes, till finally one comprehensible whole.
A thing of silver and eternity, the barracks in moonlight. Silver and eternity, the barracks in moonlight.
I want to pay them all a visit, one by one. the thousand who pass through my hands. If I don't find them, I shall look up their graves. I want to see and hear myself how they fared, all those we saw on their way.
Exempted. Am I expected to jump for joy? I asked the lawyer with the short leg. Most Jews would give their right arm. I don't want that scrap of paper, so why is it being dropped in my lap? I want to be sent to every camp across Europe, every front. I don't want to be safe.
Night on my plank bed, surrounded by women, girls, snoring and dreaming aloud, sobbing and tossing and turning, awake hours. The many, too many impressions of a much too long day washing over me. Pray, let me be the thinking heart of a whole concentration camp.
Dejection, feeling I'm cracking up. Motionless under my blankets. That's all I can do.
Feeling I'm cracking up.
Motionless under my blankets.
That's all I can do. Spring again, a whole year come round. June 1943. Right across from me, in a far corner of the camp, a blue uniform with a helmet stands in the watchtower. Under glorious blue sky. Another, an enraptured look on his face, gun dangling, is picking purple lupin.
Billowing white smoke, the locomotive puffing, people already loaded onto freight cars. Many green polizei march by singing. A woman comes carrying a child who has to go too. Some have been taken out of hospital barracks. Babies with pneumonia. Thorough job today. Big shots from The Hague have come. Count the freight cars. 35 sealed. A few planks pulled out. Hands waving through gaps as if they were drowning. Enough gloom for a lifetime. The engine gives a shriek. The whole camp holds its breath. Another 3,000 Jews are about to leave. The sky is full of birds. Lupins stand so regally. Sun shining on my face.
Rye bread. Very welcome. Don't send coupons. Address it, Dr. E. Hillesum, Assistant Jewish Council, Westerbork Camp, Post Hoog Holland. Top left, Barracks 34. Send a postcard before, so I can look out for it. For now, it's cabbage, our favorite. I hope I find a bed tonight.
Glorious fresh breeze. Father and I on a stone. A crew of yellow stars before us digging a moat. And beyond that, the barbed wire. At the corner of the camp, a guard high up in his hut. We are black with sand. I've just lifted Father down from his second-tier bunk, and we are airing a bit. In the big barracks, he'd have gone to pieces. Somehow, we'll pull each other through.
Misha's been deferred, and we've hung on to my parents, too. Next week, the battle starts over. 5 in the morning, I forced my way to the hospital to make sure Father wasn't dragged off by mistake and tell the good news about Misha. The long train stood waiting all day. Empty cattle cars, each with a bucket in the middle. Paper mattresses for the sick. After Father, I crossed camp to Mother's barracks and saw off many good friends. Mother was on her narrow soldier's bed, exhausted. After a night like that, we are sick and ready to drop. We take a deep breath till the next transport.
I join the seagulls now and then. One suspects laws in their movements through the great cloudy skies. Eternal laws of another order. This noon, Yopi and I stood looking up at one of those black and silver birds flying among the massive deep blue rain clouds and felt less oppressed.
Princely, this Cronigan cake? I run over to Father's 5 minutes from my barracks, pass him a few small slices and half a bar of chocolate through the window. Glorious rye bread from Danforth. Always half to Father, who shares it with Misha. The other half for Mother. Misha was there. He beamed.
There was a rainbow this morning over the camp. sun shining in mud puddles. Have you got good news? They called out at the hospital. You look so cheerful. I wanted to say something about Mussolini quitting, peace being on the way. How could I fob them off with the rainbow? Really, the only reason.
A 104 and diarrhea. I'd post some bread for father. Keep running to the boiler house for hot water for tea. I bought a rye bread for rusks and other digestibles. I'm doing a roaring trade in rye bread. A kind lady, wife of a leading rabbi, brings a royal gift, a roll of toilet paper.
The barracks are like colorful, sultry back streets in the Orient. People shuffling narrow paths between the beds. Every bunk has a number. Someone lives at each number. Opposite me, my friend's 70-year-old father draws rust-brown barracks in a sketchbook. Beside him, someone mutters prayers over Hebrew letters. Out the window, Dutch rain clouds, potato fields. A raw wind blows through broken window panes, yet the air is stale and foul. My friend clambers down like a monkey from his bunk, triumphantly presenting a tin of pea soup. A small space is free on the stove. 12:30 on this eastern back street, I'm invited to eat pea soup.
Ten of us in here, with a few hours cooking time first thing this morning. I've had a wash at the tap in our tiny kitchen and crept back into bed, a huge pan of endives bubbling on the small hot plate.
Rain beating on our windows. Summer definitely over. From my bunk, I watch some gulls crossing the flat gray sky.
We talked of the soul. We talked of the soul killing work of picking peas and beans, about the danger of becoming demoralized, about all the dreary details of camp life. You can't describe things like that. You can only suffer them, my friend says to me, leaning forward, his elbows on the wooden table. He has fleas, holes in his socks, and cold shivers. This evening, I feel like a boy, he says, afraid of the wolf.
One morning, you were having coffee by my bed, and we talked about Rilke's Book of Hours. Remember, that book is under my pillow with a Bible. Magnificent the words of Isaiah. And thank you, too, for the tin of crab meat and the apples. Were they the last of your own? Camp bread is awful. Can you find me some sugar down a dark alley?
A stray cat came in the barracks one night. We put a hat box on the water closet, and it had kittens inside. When I don't have to sleep on an iron bunk surrounded by barbed wire, I shall have a little lamp above my bed, light around me whenever I want. Drowsing thoughts and stories whirl through my brain, random and transparent as soap bubbles. Oh, I want so to get them on paper. Waking, I lie cocooned in them. Sometimes I walk for hours, searching a quiet corner, feeling like that cat without the hat box.
To write this one page, I have gone many places. My makeshift table, a wheelbarrow by the laundry, windy dunes under an open sky, the hospital canteen. Each place I add a few words. Suddenly, the kitchen fills, a clatter of pans, and I'm off again.
August 24th. My God, those faces, that squad of green uniformed armed guards. I looked at them each in turn, sank to my knees, never so frightened in my life.
That paralyzed girl who didn't want to take her dinner plate along and found it so hard to die. Or the terrified young boy who thought he was safe, panicked, and ran off. Other Jews had to hunt him down or go in his place, who were sent anyway, put on transport as a deterrent. 50 for a moment's insanity. That boy is going to have a hard time. Dawn Invader, some flying tonight, a guard says, looking up at the stars.
The transport won't get through.
It won't get through.
Many still harbor such hopes. We watched the bombing. We watched the bombing of nearby Emden. Why shouldn't the rails be hit?
Never!
It's never happened.
I'm dressing babies, helping calm the mothers. That's all I can do. Dress and escort them to the bare cattle cars. If they can't walk, we carry them. How not curse myself?
Like a famous star, making a grand entrance, this charming figure, said to be so well disposed toward Jews, appears at the end of the road. Look! Over there, the children cry out. Look, the commandant.
The commandant steps with military precision along the line of freight cars. Gray, immaculately brushed hair beneath a green cap. Face iron gray this cruel morning, inspecting his troops, the sick, infants in arms, young mothers, shaven-headed men, his Jewish secretary in fawn riding breeches and sports jacket follows.
Black top boots, black cap, black army coat with yellow star, cruel mouth, powerful neck, the Oberdienstleiter dwarfs the commandant. Commandant, secretary, Oberdienstleiter, parade past the train, people falling back, all eyes on them. My God, are the doors really being shut?
On a bicycle, the commandant rides along the length of the train, gesturing like royalty in an opera, a piercing whistle.
The last communication we have from Etty is on a postcard found beside the rails near Westerbork.
The departure came without warning.
September 7th, 1943.
The departure came without warning. I'm on my rucksack in the middle of a full freight car. Father, mother, and Misha a few cars away. We left singing.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by the Maine Humanities Council, with support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and from friends like you. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.